Okay. It is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. And our speaker is Gilbert R. from Bakersfield. And what he told me is that he says he's overpaid in life. And I'm going to let him tell you about that.
I'm Gilbert. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here tonight. Had a full day working and stuff, but you know, this is what we do. This is what I was taught. You know, I got sober in Los Angeles and Whittier, and you know, they told me that no matter what, you know, you go to any length to do what we do and to give the message and pass the message. And I remember when they asked me about a month ago, Bill asked me if I would come over here and speak, and the first thing that I thought was that, you know, if I was still getting loaded and drunk and you asked me to come over here and get loaded and drunk, I would have been here, you know. So for that, you know, I got to live my life the way I lived, you know, pretty much same principles, you know. You know, I'm going to share about where alcohol takes me when I drink and where it's taken me, you know, when I did drink, and what AA has given me. You know, my sobriety day is July 10th of 2008, and this is my first time around, you know, doing a 12-step program, and by the grace of God, I've been able to just keep holding on to the days that go by and stuff. But you know, drinking, love to drink. I loved it from the very first time my dad gave it to me, and we were cutting the yard, and you know, and that was the way we got rewarded. You know, after we did a hard day's work on a Saturday, we got to drink beer with my dad. And I remember before we started to do the yard, I would always tell him, make sure you put mine in the freezer and on ice, because I like it real cold. And then after a while, it didn't matter if it was cold or not. I didn't give a shit. I just drank it, you know. I remember going around parties drinking the ones that were still left over you know, I love the drink, and I love the way it made me feel. You know, I was born and raised in Bakersfield. Moved around a lot of places when I was a kid, but I always ended up in Bakersfield, raised on the east side of town. You know, and my way of thinking was so different back then, just in the short time that I've been here, you know, since 08. I mean, I don't talk the way I used to talk, and I don't, you know, I try not to. You know, I try to address people the way I've been taught to. But, you know, my dad started me to drink, or you know, introduced me to it, and everything else that goes with drinking and partying, you know, all the other mind-altering substances that go with it. I always tell people it's like the way I eat Mexican food. You know, I like beans and rice together. Well, when I drink and get loaded, I like beer and everything else that goes with it. You know, I just don't drink by itself, you know. You know, my drinking took me to where, you know, I got four DUIs. Two of them were back-to-back. I was on bail when I got the second one. And all my DUIs always ended up in a police chase. For some reason, when I'm drinking and I'm driving and I see those lights behind me, I get this obsession thinking that I could get away, you know. And it's happened to me every time. I was known for that in Bakersfield with my friends. Anytime they were driving with me or something, they didn't like driving with me because they already knew if we were going to get pulled over, I wasn't going to stop. They'd have to either jump out or something, but I wasn't going to stop. And you know, I don't know. You know, I have a brother that's older than me, a couple years, and you know, he's a normie. You know, he gets to enjoy the privilege of drinking and having a job and a family and doing all the things. And I get pissed sometimes that I can't do that. You know, that I don't know why I got what I got, but you know, I lost those privileges. You know, I don't get to drink and go home after work and have the, I don't know how to drink like that. You know, So I'll take it back. My dad, you know, I started with my dad and stuff, but, you know, I love the way alcohol makes me feel. Like I said, just makes me feel brave. You know, I build a lot of walls up in my time drinking, and you know what it does to me is that I'm a taker when I drink. You know, I'm a straight taker. I think everything's owed to me. You know, the world owes me, and my mentality back then when I was getting loaded and drunk, I felt like everybody owed me something. You know, and I hated everybody, and you know, I hated the word love. I hated all that shit, and I had a lot of issues when I came to AA, because the first thing I heard was, they love you, and this and that, and I was like, oh, fuck, you know, I don't want to hear this shit, you know, because I hate love. I hate it so much, I tattooed it on my chest here, fuck your love, you know, I mean, that's how much I hate it, you know, and you know, in the beginning of getting sober, you know, my sponsor used to tell me, "Nah, Gilbert, we got to practice love here." And I said, "Love?" And so, you know, and even sometimes I tell my sponsor still, "Well, some people I got to love from across the street, you know, because I'm just, you know, even at 7.5 years, I just not there yet, you know." I had a lot of hate in my heart, you know, and what I come to find out was I had a lot of fear, you know, but I would never admit that, you know, I'm the type of alcoholic, and like I said, I'm a taker, you know, I like to squat houses and stuff like that. I squatter, you know, the houses, and then I rent the rooms out, and I did that shit for like 2 years one time in a house. I had the best yard, you know, on that block. Everybody used to compliment my yard. I had a gardener, everything. I didn't even belong in that house. I just took the boards off the windows, and I knew the history of the house. I knew that the lady was dead, and she had no family, and that the bank owned it, and they weren't going to do shit with it for a while. And so I took over. The neighbors were happy. You know, they had a house that wasn't boarded up no more next to them, and the cops used to come, break up my parties, and never did they ever realize that I wasn't supposed to be living in this house. And then, like I said, I rent the rooms, and then when I finally got caught by the bank came down there to visit me one time, and I remember my roommate tells me, says, I think there's some Jehovah's Witnesses at the door. So I go up there, and there's these people, they got briefcases, and I'm right like, hey, I don't want none of this and that. And then they said, no, we want to know, are you the owner? And I said, well, I'm the caretaker, you know, because I came up with this word when I squatted houses. I thought it was like real smart, you know, to have the caretaker. It sounded like smart. So they tell me, they go, you're the caretaker? And I said, yeah, I take care of this house for the people that own it. I go, but they live in L.A. And they're looking at me, and the guy says, I'm going to cut this all short. He says, we own this house. We're the bank. And so I was like, he goes, and you're squatting. He goes, you understand that? You go to jail for this? He says, I've been on the street for 10 minutes looking for this house. He goes, because this is the picture I'm looking for. It's all boarded up. He goes, and I don't see no boarded up house on here. He goes, and I realize you got like the best looking house on the street right here. And everything was complimentary of Home Depot, you know, because I had another little scam at Home Depot I used to do, and I used to take from Home Depot all the time. So I had patio furniture and the whole shit, you know. So anyways, this guy liked the way the house looked, and he said he never had a case like mine, so that he was going to do me a favor and let me know that the house was in escrow, and in about 6 months or 3 months I needed to be moved out. And if I didn't, then he would prosecute me, you know, or whatever. So I went in, I raised the rent for the next 3 months, told everybody that was the owner, and that he raised the rent on me, and I had to raise the rent on them. And then 3 months later, you guys got to leave. And, you know, that's the shit that my mind does when I'm getting drunk. And, Lord, I don't care about anybody. You know, it's funny now, but, I mean, it's real. It's what I did. It's how I lived. You know, I love to steal cars. You know, it was another trait of mine. I'm always stealing cars. And I remember I would drive around town in Bakersfield in the same car after 30 days stealing, and I'm still driving it. Because I would feel like they're mine, you know. I'd say, no, it's my car, you know. And I remember my cousin, I pulled up in his driveway, and he goes, get that shit out of here, man. He goes, you had that car for like 30 days, and I know it's stolen. And he goes, I don't want you having that here, you know. And, you know, it was, you know, I could say I had a lot of fun doing what I did, but then it just wasn't fun anymore, you know. Started getting locked up a lot, started finding myself more locked up than more out. You know, my kids, well, that was a wash already with them, you know. I mean, they were sick and tired of my shit, you know. Been through two marriages, which I realized today, you know, I just had those people hostage. And, you know, I just... you know, what it's done to me, though, I don't know. I know that it just got me, my mind's kind of going blank right now on me, but you know, I've done a lot of shit, like I said. You know, some of it was good, some of it was fun. And my life just started not, it wasn't working no more. Alcohol wasn't doing it no more for me, you know. And, you know, I would do those 23-day runs, you know, where I just wouldn't sleep for 23 days. I mean, I never hit the bed. You know, things just started going on in my life. You know, I experienced a couple of overdoses, and but none of it was good enough to get sober, you know. And then you know, right towards the end, 2005, a couple of years, about 2005, I was in an accident with three of my friends. One was a girl I was seeing, and we wrecked in the canyon, and you know, they passed away in this accident, and I didn't. So this is, like I say, once again, where my drinking, my using takes me. And you know, and that I shared that today. I don't know why I don't really talk about that anymore. But you know, one of the last times I was locked up, I got a letter from my daughter, and she said that I was dead to her. And, you know, she didn't want nothing to do with me no more. And that's another, you know, that's just more what alcohol did to me. You know, I could push everybody away. You know, I remember my aunt. She I used to go over there to go pay my uncle a visit every now and then, and he's a homebody. And but I remember one time coming to her house, and I was walking up, and she came running out. She goes, "Mio, mio, I love when you come over and visit." She says, "But every time you come, your uncle don't go to sleep, stays up till 3 a.m. She says, "Then he wants to have sex all night." She goes, "And I'm not." She goes, "I'm not young like that no more." She says, "I don't know what you're giving him." She says, "I don't know what's going on here and what you're giving him, but," she says, "I can't do it no more. I don't know what he do. What do you do every time he comes? He acts different. He wants to mow the yard at midnight." And so, you know, and that was the story of my life. Everywhere I went, everybody was always, "Go away, go away," you know. And, you know, and that was the story of my life. And, you know, then a time came where I'd heard about a recovery home in Whittier, and I've done recovery homes like shit, like no tomorrow. I've done 7 of them in Bakersfield, you know, and my friends used to come and get me at 3 a.m. and knock on the window, "Hey, you could do this another time, fool, let's go right now." And then I would think about it, "Yeah, you're right, I'll do it another time," and then I'd get my stuff and then I'd bounce. And, you know, and I've done that many times, you know. I've even completed recovery homes and left that same night with the paper still fresh in my back pocket, getting loaded and drunk that night. You know, because I thought I did what I was supposed to do. I stood sober for this much of time, and I did my time. And so I rewarded myself. But what I didn't know was, you know, what I was really doing. I didn't know how to live life sober. That's what I didn't know. And I started to learn that when I hit my bottom and I had to move to, I made a decision on my own free will to go try out this recovery home that they told me about in Whittier. And they told me about this recovery home a couple years back, right? But I just kept the paper in my wallet. And so I was at the bottom, man. I just, you know, nothing was working for me. The hustles weren't good no more. Just nothing was good. I mean, you know, nobody wanted me around. And I called my mom. I told her, you know what, if you can give me a ride to Whittier, I'm going to get sober. And she's heard this song and dance many times. And she's like, you know, Gilbert, I don't know if I could take you. But then, you know, that mother love, she was willing to do it. And she had to borrow my sister's truck, who had restraining orders against me. And, you know, that's how much, a lot of my family had things against me. They didn't want me around. And she told my mom, you're wasting your time, man, taking him over there. He's bullshitting you. He's probably lying. And so she took my sister's truck anyways, and she took me to this place in Whittier. And, you know, I'll be honest, you know, I did my last shit that morning. I got up there, or I was on the way up there, and I kept thinking, you know what, if this doesn't work, I'll just get me a little bit of sleep time, charge the batteries up again, and I'll steal their money in the van, and I'll come back. You know, that was my best thinking. That's how my mind thought. You know, I was like, but little did I know, thank God, he had a different plan for me. And when I got out there, not only did I do my year program, you know, I stood there for 16 months. And I continued to stay and live up there for about 4.5 years. And I just lived and breathed AA. You know, I just, I met a group of men up there that, till today, you know, I keep in touch with. I do men's retreats with. That's how I met Bill, and I met him at a retreat this September. And I do this retreat faithfully every year because it's what I do to stay sober and keep in touch with my friends from LA since I moved back to Bakersfield. These men put up with my shit my first year sober, taught me the do's and don'ts and how I'm supposed to act, how I should act. And then I just watched them live their lives and watched how they conducted themselves. And I started to realize that the drinking and using wasn't even my problem. It was just me learning how to live this life sober. I didn't know how. You know, I didn't know how to talk to people, you know. And then in my you know, getting sober and everything, I met my wife who's in the program, and when me and her started to see each other and date, she made a decision that she wanted to move to Bakersfield and leave LA. That wasn't my plans to move back home. But we made a decision to move back to Bakersfield. You know, I was scared of Bakersfield, to be honest. I never could stay sober in Bakersfield. That was my stomping grounds. And, you know, I just trusted in God. And that's something that was corny for you to even talk to me about. I didn't get to meet a God of my own understanding until 2 years, 2.5 years into my sobriety. I could honestly say I finally got to understand who my God is and how he loves me unconditionally. I didn't know what that really meant, unconditionally. My God loves me no matter what. And I realized that he never left me when I was out on the streets thinking I was abandoned. You know, because I knew a God. I knew the one my mom and them told me about. God's going to, man, when you see God, you wait till you go up there. You know, I knew that God. But you know, that ain't my God today. I don't know what he looks like. I don't have I can't tell you what he looks like. You know, but I know he's there because I feel him. I feel him in here. You know, I feel him up here, which is hard to get up here because the mess that runs in my head, shit. I don't know how, you know, only God could run up in there and clean that up, you know. Because I got like a parole board up there, a freaking, I got some sick ass shit up there, you know. And, but you know, and I've learned to find out that's my enemy, you know. But these men that taught me and my sponsor who walked me through the steps, man, I'm forever grateful for these men that they didn't just give up on me, you know. Today I could honestly say that I am married and that I am happily married and I'm in a relationship that we work together at this, you know. I never had that. I don't have to call my wife out of her name, you know. She has a name she was born with. I understand that today, but back in the day, I didn't understand that, you know. I thought the B word stood for everybody, you know, and that's just what it was. But I don't have to do that anymore. I understand that I have decisions. I get to make decisions. I got the sky's the limit where I could go. You know, we went to a place up in I can't think of it right now, but it was by San Diego. It was where all the rich people go. Put it that way, like all white and rich, and I was the only Mexican that probably looked like a homie. Cause back then I had my little goatee going more, and so they probably thought I was like this, you know, homie guy or whatever. But they were very nice to me. And I told them straight, the only reason why I'd ever be out in a neighborhood like this is if I was coming to look to steal some cars. I said, but you know what? I get to go free anywhere. You know, I don't have to represent shit. Because I ain't about that no more. You know, and that's what these men have taught me. You know, I started to get to grow up. You know, I thought I was all grown up and real macho. I thought I knew everything. You know, I didn't know shit. And that's what my sponsor told me when he first opened the book. He goes, this is how much you know about sobriety, Gilbert. He goes, can you read this? Can you read the first page? I said, well, it's blank. He says, that's right. That's how much you know. You don't know shit. He goes, about being sober, bro. You know, and he said, you know, but that was it. You know, I don't think everything came easy for me, you know, being sober, you know, doing my four step and everything. I had to do it twice because I didn't take the directions like I was supposed to. I thought my sponsor was on a real power trip, and I thought he wanted to know a little too much about my business, you know, because there was things, didn't you know, that me and the homie swore out that we would never tell. You know, I mean, I had those things, but you know, I got to meet somebody that I trusted, and I was able to write it down and turn it over to him and read it to him and turn it over to my God. And I can't explain it, but you know, other than that, I've never felt so free in my life as for just feeling good about myself. I remember, man, looking in the mirrors wasn't a thing that I liked to do back in the day. I didn't like looking in the mirror. Not that I like looking in it now, but I'm comfortable looking in the mirror today. I like who I see, you know. And when I went to Bakersfield, to move to Bakersfield, I remember, man, it's going to be hard to find a job over there because I burned every freaking bridge there was. You know, I burned everybody there was. You know, I didn't think there was anybody left, you know, in Bakersfield to burn. And a man that taught me the trade, I do air conditioning work, and the man that taught me the trade, started teaching me like at the age of 18 when I got out of a youth authority, and he taught me the trade, and it was funny too back then, my mindset, you know, when I went on the first job site ever, you know, big construction job site, I looked at the plumbers, the electricians, and all the other trades like they were gangs, and I was the AC gang, you know. So, and that's how my mind thought, because I thought the only way I could coordinate or like categorize everything. So I said, oh, that's an electrician? Oh, all right. I said, that's a plumber? All right. So then I would walk up to them, hey, man, you a plumber? Who are you? You know, and they'd be like, yeah, I'm a plumber. And I'm like, well, I'm AC guy, man. What's up? You know, and so So my boss, or my boss, who's my boss today, he used to have to check me. He said, Gilbert, man, what are you doing, man? We got to work with these people, man. We ain't trying to come here to fight, you know? And I'm over there cutting the electrical shit, just like, man, move this shit out the way. And, you know, it's like, no, you don't do that, you know? You don't. But see, that's the only way I knew how to think, you know? That's all I knew. And so, this guy has known me since, he's known me since I was 18. He has seen me at my good points, and then he has seen me at my lowest locked up. He's fired me 3 times. The last time he shared with me, I couldn't even remember the last time what I did to get fired. And he said, you didn't do anything. You just didn't show up, but you were able to call me and tell me you were in the middle of a police chase, and that you weren't going to make it to work. He goes, then I could hear the phone drop and all the cops pulling you out of the car. He goes, and that was the last time I saw you. And I told him, oh, yeah, I think I do remember that one. So, you know, it was crazy. But he told me, we'll always be friends, but I'll never hire you again, man. I can't. It's my business, and I got to protect it. And I said, I get it. I go, and I'll never ask for a job again. So when I moved to Bakersfield, I went to him to ask him for a reference. I knew not to ask for a job. And even though it's been about 9 years since I've seen him, I knew not to ask that. And so when he saw me, the first thing he said was, man, you look different. And then I said, oh, okay, well, I said, I gained some weight. I got sober, and I don't weigh 170 pounds soaking wet no more. But he told me, no, it's not that. He goes, you got sober? And I said, yeah, I got sober, and it's been this long since I've, had a drink or anything. And I said, I just want to move back to Bakersfield. I've been living in Los Angeles. I go, and I just need some reference where I can look for a job. And he told me, he says, Gilbert, he goes, I never would think about saying this. He says, but I could use somebody. And, he knows I have the experience because he's taught me this trade. And he goes, I really need somebody. He goes, let me talk to my wife and see if I can let her to agree to get you back on. And he did. He hired me. And that's been a little over 4 years ago that I've been working for him consistent. I've been given raises. I've been given the keys to his shop again. I get to be in charge sometimes depending on what jobs I'm on. And that's why I like to say I'm overpaid in life. And this is the life that AA's given me. Because even when I was using and drinking, I could have a job, but never be consistent the way I am on this job. Guarantee you, I was calling in on Mondays, maybe on Wednesdays. You might find me at work, but to give you a full 40 hours a week was hard. And then it was to the point where I wasn't willing to give you no more hours of work, and I just thought I'd go full-blown in my next career and still. But today I don't live like that because of Alcoholics Anonymous, sometimes we'll laugh at me in a while and say, man, my life's like boring. I don't do nothing no more. But you know what? I don't get locked up no more either. 2 weeks ago or a week ago, for the last month, I've been able to work at an institution doing all the air conditioning work on the kitchen at a place that I did time many times over and over and over. And I couldn't believe I passed the background check. I thought maybe my papers got slipped under and somebody didn't see it and they just swooped me through. So I'm like, I'm not saying nothing. I'm just going out there. I'm going to make this money because it's prevailing wage, and whoever does construction understands what prevailing wage is. And so I'm thinking, man, this is going to be a good Christmas, and I'm going to go. And you know what? There was no mistake. I passed the background check. It's been almost 8 years since I've been in that facility. And when I got there, the only thing that hadn't changed was the officers all knew who I was. They were like, they said, shit, where you been? Man, I thought you died or something. And I just like, man, I, and then it was everything coming back to me. One time they had a little riot going on out there, and I'm on the roof. I'm like, oh, shit, look, man, they're going over there. I already knew what was going down. But then reality is, you know what? All that is because of AA. That I got to be out there, and the facility was giving me back some money this time to be there. Instead of me giving them money for staying there, they were paying me, and paying me very well, to go be over there. And then I got to go home at the end of the day. Shit, I was like, man, this is like a win-win situation. And then they treated me good. They didn't treat me like a criminal over there. They were, you know, treating me good. And, you know, those are the things that I get out of life today. You know, that daughter that said that I was dead to her, she, I'm no longer dead to her. We get to speak every day to each other. I get to see her almost every day because she just lives a couple blocks down from me. She's given me a granddaughter that is just the love of my life. My other three kids are just in my life regularly. I'm consistent in my kids' lives today, you know. I get to be a dad. You know, I pay child support. Even though I don't sometimes want to, I pay it. They take it automatically. But, you know, and I'm okay with it. You know, I'm okay with it. You know, and these are the things that the men in AA that I hung on to, you know, taught me. You know, even if I didn't like hearing what they had to say, you know, because not everything's good, you know, and it wasn't always good for me. Don't think, I know what it feels like to have 2 days, 3 days. So, bitch, I don't ever want to have that again. And that's why I stay where I stay. Because I don't want to go back to that shit again. I don't want to be in a recovery home where somebody's telling me, or just anywhere, being locked up and having somebody tell me always what to do. Drop your pants, squat, do this, take a shower here, do this, do that. Or you know what, go put some work over here, homie, because you got to do this. I don't have to do that no more. I don't have to live like that no more. I thought that's what life was about. You know, I don't have homeboys no more. I got some good friends in my life, though. You know, I'm not better than the homies that are still out there running. I got a lot of them that are still out there running amok. And God bless them, is what I say. But I'm not better than them. I just hope that they get it someday. Because, you know, I'll wind down with this. I have a cousin of mine who, that's my road dog, my brother. I mean, he ain't even a cousin. He's like a brother to me. I love him with all my heart. And he was strung out just like I was. And he started to see the progress I was getting in my life and the things that were going on in my life when I was getting sober in the beginning. And I'd say about the first 2.5 years, maybe into my sobriety, he called me and asked for some help. And that, you know what, he wanted to go out to L.A. where I was at, and maybe he could get the same kind of deal. And I told him, you know what, you could get that deal anywhere that has got recovery in 12 steps, as long as you're willing, bro. That's what I had to learn. It's the willingness, see? I could have, those 7 recovery homes I went to in Bakersfield, I could have got that a long time ago if I was just willing to listen, take some direction, and change. Because that was another thing they told me, Gilbert, it's not hard to change, man, because there's only one thing you got to change. And I said, what's that? And they said, everything. I said, oh, shit. You know, that's like, that's, you just made me go down the ladder, you know. And even today, at 7.5 years sober, I like to just take it day by day. Because if you start telling me I'm never going to drink again or use again, or this is a lifetime thing, I mean, I get it. I know it's a lifetime thing. But sometimes my head is just like, bam. You know, I'll go back to the story with my cousin real quick. He wanted to go to L.A. and get sober. And so I set it up with the recovery home. I said, you know what, I'm not going to come down and get you. I said, but I'll let the recovery home get you. I said, they'll come pick you up, everything. And so they went down to get him, and then they gave me a call when they got there and told me that he had a change of heart and that he didn't want to go because he was getting back with his girlfriend or something like that. So he wanted to talk to me on the phone. And when he got on the phone, you know, first thing he's like, hey, cousin, you know, you ain't mad at me, right? Like, you know, he goes, I'm not that bad right now. And he said, he goes, and then, you know, my girlfriend's back from the, you know, we're trying to get it together. And I said, hey, bro, you know what? I said, do what you got to do. And when you had enough, you had enough. I said, and I hope this ain't the last time you get a chance to get sober. That's what I told him. And how much that hurt me to tell him that, knowing that 5 days later he would overdose in his room and pass away. You know, and it was exactly 5 days down the road, my mom calls me up and says, you're not going to believe who just passed away, and they found him dead in the room. And I knew who it was. You know, and my last words to him was, I hope this ain't your last chance. I felt like I cursed him or something. I don't know. You know, but all I know is that that could have been me. See? And I know that today. That could still be me. I'm not exempt to that. You know, I love being sober. You know, I love the things that I get to do in my life today. You know, I get to do things today. You know, I get to be a part of things today. You know, I get to come out here and share a message with people and then go back to home tonight and go get up in the morning and go to work again. You know, those are the things I get to do. You know, I could go on and on when it comes to recovery, you know, and just keep going on stories, you know. But the bottom line is the work, it takes action, and the work's in the book. You got to get a sponsor, you know, work with somebody. You know, you don't have to do this alone. That's what they taught us, you know, that's what they taught me. You're not alone in this, you know. You know, use the fellowship as your guide until you find your own. You know, I borrowed my sponsors. I used the fellowship, you know, for the first 2.5 years before I could actually feel his presence. You know, I could actually understand that I do have a God in my life today. You know, I've had some bad things happen in my life sober, and you know, the solution for me today isn't to get loaded. That's not my solution, to drink and get loaded. That's why I realized that was only 5% of my problem. You know, the other was a 95% was just not knowing how to live life. You know, and I still continue to learn this. It's a daily reprieve. You know, we just do this one day at a time. You know, and for the newcomers, you know, you're in for a ride. I'm not going to lie. Hang on. You know, hang on. You know, work those steps, man. All the shit that you want is, oh, but I need to do this. I got to, for my family, I'm telling you right now, give the first year to yourself. That's what I was taught. Because you know what? My kids had been waiting already for a bunch of years. It wasn't going to kill them to wait one more year for me to get my shit together. Because for the last 7.5 years that I've been sober, going on 8 years, God willing, in July I'll be going on 8 years, my kids have been able to benefit from it now. You know? I can't say that, oh, I just went and did it for my kids. You know what? Because I tried all that shit and it didn't work. And it was nothing personal against my kids. I was powerless over this disease. But when I did it for me, because I was sick and tired of the way I felt, I was able to benefit my family and my kids, and I do it for my kids today. You know, but I also do it for myself. You know, and it was good to come out here. Thank you, Bill. It helps me in my recovery to know that, you know, I'm just one drink away, and that, you know, this is what we got to do, no matter what, to stay sober. You know, you just stay plugged in, and when you're asked to be in service, you go and you do it, you know, and I love doing this, you know, to come and talk. I mean, it's nerve-wracking. I don't like standing up in front of a bunch of people and say stuff, but, you know, thank you. Thank you guys for letting me share.